Warren Alney here with today's Talking Point. Iceland may seem remote to most Americans, but it's subject to political forces like the rest of Europe and to social media like the rest of the world. That's one reason for the rise of the Pirate Party, whose 49-year-old leader speaks a familiar populist language.
It is a people's movement, ordinary people being able to go into parliament to change laws that will actually give the other people more power. It's a message of hope.
Paul Fontaine is news editor at Iceland's Reykjavik Grapevine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I didn't attempt to pronounce the name of the leader of the Pirate Party. Will you do it for me?
Yes, her name is Birgitte Jonsdottir.
Okay. Thank you for that. The Pirate Party is expected to do well in this week's parliamentary election. Why?
Well, it's many reasons. It really starts in 2008 with the financial crash. In the wake of that chaos, there are a number of hopes and dreams that the Icelandic people had, amongst them to not just change the landscape legislatively, but systemically, because it was believed that we have systematic problems in this country that led us to that point. And the Pirate Party have really been at the forefront of that movement for changing the system itself.
Who are they?
Who are they? Well, a number of them are former activists. Birgitte Jonsdottir has a long history in activism in Iceland. Some of them have been hackers. Some of them are complete newcomers to politics. Some of them used to be in other parties. It's a mixed bag. In terms of generalities, the demographic does tend to skew younger, like 35 and younger.
I understand but there are libertarians, there are anarchists. What do they stand for?
Okay, first of all, there are no anarchists in any political party in the world, right? Anarchists do not run for office.
Okay, I'm just reading what I read. Go ahead. I didn't read it in your papers.
I don't blame you. There's this characterization that has been going on about the Pirate Party, and some of it rings true. There is a libertarian tendency in the Pirate Party. A lot of them have left, however, to go to more traditional conservative parties. So the Pirate Party doesn't like to adhere itself to the left-right spectrum. They've made it really clear that they don't want to be tied down to left and right, which is, you know, a nice idea, but people do still use the left-right spectrum as a gauge for which way to go. And polls have shown that the majority of Pirate Party voters are left of center.
Left of center, even though they're libertarians.
Well, there's many stripes of libertarianism.
Of course, that's true, yeah. So I take it that they are relatively new. Why do they call themselves the Pirate Party?
You would have to ask the original founders of the Pirate Party itself. I mean, this is a movement that started elsewhere in the world and then came here. But essentially, I believe it ties into the Internet. They're big proponents of copyleft. They're big proponents of people's individuals' right to privacy, but at the same time, government transparency, and using the Internet as a tool for more direct democratic participation of the populace. And so pirating being used as this buzzword for people who act freely on the Internet, I think was probably brought into the fold where this is concerned. But this is just speculation on my part because the name originated elsewhere.
One of the things that they have suggested, as I understand it, is that Edward Snowden might come and live in Iceland.
That was one of their proposals. Snowden hasn't really made any noises about moving to Iceland if the pirates lead the next coalition. However, their proposal does have wide-ranging implications on a foreign policy level. If Iceland does adopt this policy of becoming a safe haven for whistleblowers, whether they come from the intelligence community like Snowden or the defense community or the corporate community, and whistleblowers come here for safe haven, that could have serious implications on a foreign policy level across the world, really.
Well, certainly the United States would demand that he be extradited, I would assume, if that were to happen. And then Iceland's relationship with the United States might be affected if they wouldn't do it.
Certainly. This is something that was brought up when the original idea was floated of granting him asylum, that, you know, Iceland is a NATO country. And we do have a pretty good relationship with the United States, yeah. So, yeah, it would definitely change that aspect of U.S.-Icelandic relationships. However, Iceland is a sovereign country, and if they decide that they want to adopt this policy of providing a safe haven, then there's there's little the United States could do about it.
You mentioned the internet. What about the idea of polling people on the internet, online, to help decide public policy?
Oh, you mean their how they form their platforms?
Is that how they did it?
That's one of the ways, yeah. One of the interesting, they have a very complex process, but at the ground level, the different aspects of their platform, they invite the general public to open meetings to discuss ideas and to help hammer out this platform. So it's not party insiders behind closed doors deciding this is what our platform should be. This is all drawn from the people. They're further amended and fine-tuned their platform, again, through democratic participation. And I think that's very appealing to a lot of ISANders because, as you might have seen, we do have, an enjoyment of democratic participation, whether it's gathering in protest demonstrations, taking part in petitions and referendums. It's the Pirate Party appeals to that aspect of the Icelandic character, which is pretty recent, I would add. Before 2008, Icelanders just didn't protest. Like when Iceland was brought into the Coalition of the Willing under suspicious circumstances, I had asked many Icelanders, like, why isn't everybody out on the streets? There's millions of people protesting this war around the world. What about here? And everybody was just like, yeah, we don't protest. We're not those kind of only hippies and radicals protest. We don't do that. Well, that all changed in 2008. So Icelanders have shown like a flexibility of thought where that's concerned, and they've definitely caught the democracy bug.
Back to the Pirate Party, is it possible that they could form a coalition and be part of a ruling government in Iceland?
Mm-hmm. They most certainly could be. In fact, talks have been ongoing between the Pirates and three other opposition parties. Over the past couple weeks now, they've had three meetings where they're trying to work out not necessarily delegation of power in terms of like who's going to be minister of what, but where they can find common ground between their respective platforms. And at the conclusion of the meeting, which wrapped up just this morning, leaders of the opposition all had said, yeah, we found a lot of harmony and a lot of common ground, and we see full reason to examine the possibility of forming a coalition. And that's incredibly encouraging because normally those kind of talks, first of all, happen in secret before the election. In this case, they're happening very, very openly. And second, that gives them a running head start so that if they do end up getting a mandate to form a coalition, they'll have a lot of the broad strokes already worked out.
Is Iceland a small enough country in terms of population that you could have then a sort of town hall version of government?
I would think so, yes. I mean, it's not just the smallness either. I mean, 330,000 people is a small country, definitely. And there's small towns in America that have more people than that.
Yeah.
But it's also the fact that half the population lives in a single municipal area around the capital. This allows for, a much more direct form of democracy, provided that the structure is there. The structure that we have right now is, I would think, in my opinion, it's more suited to a country of millions of people. The sort of Byzantine representational system that we have now. We need a more direct system. The Icelanders have expressed that point of view repeatedly and have shown a willingness to participate in democracy more directly. And so I think they're ready for it. I think that's where a lot of their support comes from, in part.
Well, Paul Fontaine, thanks once again for being on our program. You've been on before. It's always good to have you, news editor at the Reykjavik Grapevine in Iceland. We'll see what happens this weekend.
Thank you.